My sinuses have been running a lot too in the cold, which I imagine is just a natural response, right? Like that's
your
body is responding like it's cold, more saline.
Yeah.
Gotta keep those passages going.
Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we simplify the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland.
Heretofore known as the Great White North.
Yes.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering bicycling, trains and transit, adventures and life hacks. And today, traveling through India.
Through India.
And back.
Yes. We have someone who has found himself, I think.
You've heard it here first. You scooped it from everyone.
Guthrie Straw, everyone's favorite person from everything bicycling related in Portland, basically.
Yay.
It's good to see you again.
You as well.
Welcome home.
Thank you.
Tell us briefly, where were you and when did you return?
I was in southern India for about a month, and of that month I did around a 2.5 week bike tour from Bangalore, which is sort of like south central India, towards the coast of Kozhikode, which is on the western side of the country.
Very cool. And you are freshly returned, so it's good to have you back in Portland.
Thank you. It's excellent to be back. I love the snow, so this last week's been pretty swell.
I would imagine it's colder here than where you were.
Just a little bit.
Just a tad.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight, and thank you for joining us on late notice, but you are the person who likes to ride his bike through the snow and ice. So
I will always be your pinch hitter, for sure.
Yeah!
And you're more than that, sir. Honestly, I feel bad that we haven't had you back, except you were in India, so that's our excuse.
Yeah, it's a little hard that way.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, Aaron Flores.
Yes.
Holy shit.
We're never going back to work.
We have been snowbound and icebound in Portland, Oregon now for almost a week.
It is. What day is this? Like, what is the date?
It's Monday.
It's the 16th.
Yep. It is Martin Luther King Jr.
Day. We have worked, what, 3 days since the beginning of the year?
Jeez. Oh, since the beginning of the school year. Yeah, that's a good question. I haven't counted them up. I wish that I could say that I knew, but
been,
I do not.
I can at least say with confidence there have been more days that we have been off than days that we have been on.
That's right, yeah.
And I mean like going to work.
Right. So the bright side of this is that Portland, Oregon looks beautiful right now. Even with like the muddy ruts and the ice and all this stuff and the arterials being gross.
There's something kind of neat looking about it.
Most of the city looks amazing. It's still got that beautiful frosted winter look to it. But a large part of the city is still just encased and encrusted. And it's been just long enough. I don't think I'm a seasonal affective depressive sort of person. And I'm not that much depressive in general. But I've been feeling it by being indoors.
Oh, man. Yeah, I've been going stir crazy.
Yeah.
So if it's that way for me, I would guess that it's that way for a lot of other people as well. And it's not that you can't go outside, but your options get a bit more limited.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know if you guys experienced this, but this was my experience. Was like the first 2-3 days, like after it came down and it was like mostly powder, it was like tons of fun.
Yeah. Snow day. It's like classic when you're a kid and you're like, I'm going to go out and play.
I was riding around in it with the Pugsley. It was pretty awesome.
It's good weather for a fat bike.
It's great weather for a fat bike. Although I am really surprised at the size tires you got.
26 1/5s.
I can't believe that.
And that's what you started with on your disc trucker. Am I right?
Yeah. I've yet to bring that out.
Yeah. Inch and a half. But that's what you're riding, Guthrie.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have to say it's mostly technique based.
Okay. But I would say after that, after like the roads have been driven on and not plowed, I mean, I know like they're trying to plow them as much as possible, but
with the 55 snow plows that we have.
Right.
And that's it.
Thank you, Seattle.
Yeah.
Much of them on loan from Seattle.
They sent us 11, I think.
Yep.
Still like, I don't know, not plowed well enough. In my perspective, and like I'm not a city employee or a person who plows, so I guess I can only speak so much. But here's
the
thing:
plow.
Is, Here's
just
the thing.
Not with a
yeah.
snowplow.
They've been driven over, like the snow gets driven over and driven over and driven over, and mm-hmm. that snow gets compacted.
Right.
And pressure is directly proportional to heat.
Uh-huh.
And so the more pressure you put on this snow, it's going to melt it. And then it freezes over and then melts and then freezes over.
Absolutely
like,
right.
Like we're talking kind of on a smaller level, but it builds up. And now what we have right now, which is just inches of ice on sidewalks and roads.
Yeah.
And, like, it makes walking treacherous. It makes biking no fun.
Mm-hmm. Unless you're Guthrie.
I can't believe you wrote in this. And when you talk to me on the phone and you're like, so I'll just ride down that. And I'm like, sure. Okay.
So whatever, you know
maybe that's just a figure of speech for this guy.
So we all know how Aaron is the king of division.
I see. You are the king of ice?
For the first time in 5 years, the last 2 days, I have been the king of MLK.
Nice.
You've been riding on the biggest arterial in Portland, arguably.
It's one of the few that's actually decently clear right now.
That's true. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's we posted some tips on Cycle Portland's Twitter the other day, which is... for your commute tomorrow, and basically it boils down to just having way more attention to your road surface. Like the only time you can really afford to look up is if you're at a stop sign to see who's coming through. And I actually really like riding the rut, and so I'm a little thankful for it, because if you get like going street right now, which is pretty much a bike highway in the Northeast area, it's actually the worst street ridden on. Yeah, because nobody's been there to pack it down. And so everything just tears right out as soon as you try to put pressure on it.
Oh, really?
Okay.
So I've been taking Prescott. I've been taking a lot of MLK.
All the arterials.
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah.
And everybody else is going slow, too. So it's kind of nice, because on a bike, you're going about the same speed as vehicles are, as long as they're playing it safe.
Right. Which most are. I've been fairly impressed with most of the people I've seen.
Yeah. Every now and then you,
I'm 50-50.
You get one person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm 70. Well, I'm 37. Okay. I can think of a couple instances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yes.
There's a lot of people I see skidding out and spinning out, and I keep wanting to tell them. I haven't yet gone up to someone and said, hey, just put it into first gear and see what happens.
Right.
But
right.
A lot of people with automatic transmissions are just like burning. They're not burning rubber. They're just like spinning tires.
It gets better. Automatics even have a low gear.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Yes. It's well worth taking advantage of. But that's the sort of thing that I haven't found a friendly way to say it yet, so I haven't.
Yeah. I'm such a fan of chains. Like, we have a car, and we were actually went to, like, in classic biting off maybe more than you could chew. Actually, probably not. We went down to Hawthorne for the screening of a movie, and it was actually really neat, because when we entered, there was no snow, and when we exited, there was about 5 inches.
It all fell away. It's like Christmas morning.
But as a person who was born in the eastern side of Oregon and somebody who knows about the existence of chains, we actually bailed about 3 or 4 people out on our way home.
Oh, you already
weren't
had them
in that circumstance.
You.
Oh, yeah. No, that's my stipulation. Is as soon as there's snow on the ground, I won't drive without chains. Just like kind of that personal thing for me. Because I want to try to be the most prepared in that situation, as opposed to needing help from something external.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Yeah, there was a poor guy on Belmont who ended up skidding out, so our party pushed him to a place where he could park for the night, and we actually took him from 20th and Belmont out to 87th and Foster, just so he could, with our chains and our Prius, just so he wouldn't freeze his ass off in a bar in Belmont for 3 days.
Yeah.
Right, right. That gets expensive.
Yep.
And lonely.
Yes, it does. So, no, I mean, I've been trying to do as much as I can to help folks out where it's needed, and
I'm
trying to enjoy the
snow
biking
down,
on the rest.
Yeah,
yeah, totally. No, I'll go out in it, but I won't go out in it unprepared.
Right. That makes sense.
That's good. I'm just curious, is the whole chains, no change thing, is that an Eastern Oregonian trait, or is that just a preparedness person trait?
If you live in Eastern Oregon, you're 98% of the time you're gonna have studs,
okay,
because you just keep a set around.
Sure.
But
studded
a lot of
tires.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's correct. Although sometimes you'll still carry a backup set if you make a lot of drives over the passes in Eastern Oregon. Blue Mountain in particular has been a little bad this year. You will drive studs for your journey, you'll chain up for maybe 2 or 3 miles going over the pass, and then you'll unchain and just go back to studs. But that's pretty common over there.
Gotcha. That's intense. This is the thing, again, I think the reason that it's so difficult for Portland is that doesn't happen here on the western side of the state all that often.
It doesn't.
And
but I think it's happening more often.
Well, yeah. Weather patterns have changed.
They are changing.
Right.
Whether or not, you know...
Whether or not you believe in climate change, the climate is changing.
So. You know, and yeah, I won't get like crazy political about it, but it
you
may
can't
be,
not
it
be
may,
political
right.
these days.
Yeah. But it may be time that we start thinking about, like, well, maybe we might be a city that gets snow in the winter now.
You sure. are. Yeah, I think you're in good company. You're talking to an environmental science major, so.
Okay. Well, and I'm not.
You're allowed to talk about climate.
Well, I'm not even necessarily talking about like climate change in its political implications so much as just realizing the practicality of it is, you know, when I first moved to Portland, I think I've mentioned this in the last show. When I first moved to Portland, everyone was like, "Yeah, it snows, but it never really sticks around."
Mm-hmm.
And like over the years, I've been seeing it like sticking around a little bit longer every year.
Mm.
And I would love to be wrong about this. But I think it's time we, as a city, maybe start thinking about, like, maybe we are actually having real winters.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
And that's something that the city has been thinking about a lot, just as far as, like, do we or do we not use salt? Because the city has not used salt for a long time.
Right.
Citing environmental concerns. They don't want to just throw a bunch of salt everywhere if they don't need to. But
I can get behind that
sure.
on principle.
But we got to figure out, like, gravel is not going to cut it, especially in conditions like the ones we've been seeing. So
oh, no.
I think in the same as is for many environmental problems, it requires a cultural shift.
Right.
So as soon as you get people thinking in more like a safety mindset, you know, if you are going to, I think that we have the hubris to think we can do these things in the weather, but we just can't. and so what I've,
and
I've
so
seen
we
a lot
spin our tires.
Exactly. I've seen a lot of that the last few days. And that's where I come down. I was like, you know, come on, seriously. And I realize, like, obviously there's always extenuating circumstances. But I just encourage people. It's like, really, if you don't have to drive, like, please don't. It's not safe to do so.
And, you know, kudos to the TriMet people.
Yeah,
yeah.
They've been great.
Again, who are out there driving in all of this.
It's always and forever. Yeah. TriMet drivers are our heroes. Yeah, we should Twitter that again.
Yeah.
Hey, I just got on my text messages, schools and district offices are closed tomorrow. That means you and I.
Oh, we're never going back to work.
Are not going back to work.
Oh, boy.
Well, and that is nice because right, what they're predicting overnight is for it to start raining at 1 in the morning. And freezing.
And freezing overnight.
And continuing to rain and freeze throughout 10 a.m.
Yeah.
So it's not a good day to be outside tomorrow if you don't have to be. At the same time, you know, if you want to go out and, like, walk around and smell the fresh air, it's going to
be
lovely.
Safe,
we're still looking at 50 by Wednesday or Thursday, or
That's what it said last time I looked at it.
Okay.
50 degrees, you mean?
That's correct.
Yeah, it's going to Fahrenheit.
What's
it's
your favorite
warm up.
Weather app?
My favorite weather app is... I've tooled around with a bunch, but I kind of just go back to the standard weather app
the
iPhone for
the
convenience.
iOS weather app. Yeah.
So, and here's the reason I don't go too far on it is they're often wrong, and I'm typically doing what I'm doing regardless.
So
all it means is putting on more layers or taking more rain jackets. And so I'll just use it as a kind of baseline there. But I'm usually trying to be prepped for it either way.
Yeah, it's tricky to get all that stuff lined up in time.
Yeah.
Especially if you don't already have specialized gear. Like some people who like to go out, for example, my wife goes skiing and she loves to go skiing and it's a big pastime. She went this weekend.
Yeah.
It's a great time to be up there because there's a lot of snow. Although it is a treacherous time to travel.
She could also go skiing in her own neighborhood at this point.
Yeah, and many people do. Yeah. I've seen a lot of people skiing either for exercise or transportation or both here in the city. But I don't have all that stuff. I've got decent rain gear, but it's not good snow gear.
No.
Yeah.
It's tricky.
Yeah, and that's actually one of, I think, the most unfortunate thing. Like, I mean, as much as I love snow, I've been very fortunate in that I am able to afford the type of equipment that allows me to do so, and it's been stuff I've acquired over years. Like, I'm actually wearing a Puffy from Patagonia that was found in a Salvation Army store up in Anchorage, Alaska.
Oh, really?
It was given to me. But there's no way I'd go out and spend, you know, $200 or $300 on this jacket.
Right.
I think it affects people from socioeconomic, you know, obviously the worst, and those are people that really can't afford to be missing work as well. And so it's, you know, that component, it's really nice for 2 or 3 days. But like we were talking about, when it goes on for weeks, you know, definitely it would be good to see some solutions out there.
Right. And other parts of the country are used to this.
This is true.
Other parts of the country, they have a way to get through and to
have
life as usual.
Infrastructure in place, yeah.
At this point, I mean, much of Portland is progressing as usual. I've noticed that every coffee shop and every bar is open.
Because
people need
their
coffee and people need their booze.
That's how it was in the big one 3 years ago, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like we just kind of holed up for 3 days and walked to our corner store.
Right.
but we're talking almost
every Plaid Pantry was still open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most, yeah. I've gotten to know the Alberta Street Market owners very, very well at this point.
Those are people you want to know well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're great.
Yeah.
Absolutely great.
I need to pay a visit to my my local corner store tonight.
There was a question. There was a charge. So Anna and I share a credit card.
Yes.
We're experimenting in shared finances.
Ooh.
And yeah.
It's quite the experiment.
Yeah. Quite the commitment to each other.
That's awesome.
And there was a question of a certain charge at the 52nd and Powell Plaid Pantry.
That was me.
And we weren't sure which one of us it was, in all honesty, because that was like sort of our home base for a long time, because that's where the 71 picks up. So anytime I'm going back to my house from her house, or she's going to my house from her house, or she's going back to her house from my, you know, whatever, that's like sort of where you go and you wait and you get yourself a cup of coffee or a snack.
Oh, yes.
You know, to wait for the 71 or wait for the 9, you know. So anyways, long story short was we spent so much time there that we've accrued these charges and we don't know whose they are.
That's kind of like sweet though, isn't it? Like you don't know. It's just this shared experience.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You're going to set a budget. It's going to be a romantic budget for waiting for the bus for each other.
Have you guys experimented with apps or like some type of tracking?
Well, so we have you know, the one credit card that she keeps track of, like it's really... This is maybe more information than she cares that I share, so I'll try to be like
that's okay.
Really general. So we have the one credit card, and then basically we Venmo each other like the balance.
Mm-hmm.
So nice. You know, I have also that credit card, and I'll swipe something, and then I just have to remember to Venmo it. But she's really on top of, you know, seeing that charge sometimes that very next day.
Yeah. I think that's good, though, because it gets away from you so fast. It's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's really taught me to be more attentive to what I'm spending money on. Knowing that someone else is looking at
it's what easier I'm to keep. Yeah, it's easier to make a goal and it's easier to keep to a plan when someone else is watching it for you,
you know,
or with
She's never done this, but every now and then, like, I think... You know, I go to like buy, well, for example, I bought coffee and a sandwich over at Gold Rush, this coffee bar over on the corner here. And, you know, I tipped the guy, and she would never actually say this, but there's a part of me that is in the back of my head, like inserting this voice into her saying like, you know, you tipped that guy. What? For what?
You know? You don't need to tip him that much.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I hope for both of you and anybody else listening in Portland that that we get through this with the minimal amount of damage and the minimal amount of problems and all that. For anybody outside of Portland, you go ahead and laugh at us.
Yes,
it's fine.
Please.
Just don't laugh if I fall down and crack my head, because that could happen tomorrow.
Why didn't I bring my helmet? You know,
exactly,
just walking down the street.
Walking is one of our more dangerous activities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's... Yeah, there's some bad spots out there for sure.
Well, I will say, I don't know if I mentioned these before, but Yak Tracks is the brand I've been using.
I finally ordered some.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
They're like tire chains for your shoes.
Yep.
And it's
yep.
just like, I don't have any good winter boots. Even if I did, they might not stand up to some of this ice that we've been seeing. But Yak Tracks, you slip them on over whatever shoe you've got. I put them on rubber boots the other day. I put them on my shoes. We're not sponsored, by the way. I'm just a fan.
They're pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Anna has another brand called Ice Trekkers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which are like actual chains.
Yep.
On underneath and
really,
yeah, man, she hauls ass in that. She's she like wears like these, you know, not high heeled but a heeled boot,
yeah,
and like they still get tread.
That's all right.
With yeah,
oh, good for her.
I was talking with somebody the other day, and they were trying to convince me that if it's pure ice, that some like traction devices such as Yak Tracks, etc., are actually worse. And I was just like couldn't wrap it around concept wise of like, all right, so you're telling me rubber. On, I mean, like surface area, I could see that argument, but I feel like you get, out ahead every time.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a no brainer.
You need to dig into the ice, and like, you're not going to do that with a rubbered sole.
Yeah. I mean, at some point in time, I don't know. And this is me with neither of those traction devices going around in extra tough rain boots, but,
yeah, but you biked here.
Yeah.
It's fine.
That would be true.
You're impervious.
Yeah. Talk about surface area.
Yeah.
You know. The one place where the Yak Tracks or whatever traction devices you have on your shoes don't help you,
Where is that?
The grocery store where the floor is wet.
Yep.
Oh.
And suddenly you don't have,
Yep. You got to make sure on tile, you got to make sure to take them back off.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyways, that's, I did want to say thanks to anybody who hung on last year through the noise at the Beer Mongers. We didn't have access
last week.
Last episode. It was noisy there.
It turned out all right, though.
I think it turned out okay, but everyone has their own level of tolerance, so I do want to say thanks, everybody, for listening.
It is not the quality you'd come to expect from the Sprocket Podcast.
That's right. And yet, we did have a good time.
We did have a quality conversation, which I'm sure is exactly what you would come to.
And it was ambiance.
Yeah, it was.
There you go.
And a great conversation with Sean Stroop of Gateway Green, who has a hand in making that happen. And, mountain bike and trail riding access for people here
in
the Portland area.
Yeah. So I get emails from Universal Cycles.
You do.
You know, just their little monthly whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gateway Green, the dig project, or I think they call it the Big Dig, was on there.
Oh.
They talked about that.
Oh, so nice. Great.
Yeah, good on Sean.
That's right. February 11th, right?
The gang. Yes.
Yeah, so people want to come out and help dig and make things happen. This is the sort of thing that only happens with a little bit of friendly muscle. So.
Yay.
Yeah.
Thanks. There's not a half inch of ice on the ground.
That's right. Yeah.
Bring your ice picks.
We can only hope. Yeah, get that 50-degree weather coming here. The banana belt will be here soon, I think. Fingers crossed. So, but we were at the Beer Mongers last week, and this week we are drinking beverages courtesy of the Beer Mongers because they, rain, sleet, or snow, like the Postal Service, will deliver your goods to you on time.
Oh, wow.
So, well, they won't actually deliver.
No. You got to go to them.
You got to go to
But they're open 365 days of the year.
Yes.
And they will including deliver. Are really, really like, you know, tomorrow when it's all icy, someone's going to be there serving and selling you beer.
Wow,
so,
that's amazing.
Yeah. They make it happen.
Wow.
So good on you, Beer Mongers. And for that, I just wanted to thanks. I'm opening this Q ginger beer because I'm not drinking in January because I'm fat. So Guthrie, let's talk about India.
Great.
So,
that's what you came
here for.
We've been all over the place.
Tell us
a little
bit.
And that's all the time we have for tonight.
Thank you for joining us. Tell us about what took you over there and what how did you decide to do a bike tour there?
So I had the good fortune of having a friend who in college met a really nice gal from India who was studying abroad. And what ended up happening is they decided to get married. And their wedding was happening in India, which is where most of her family was from. And so I had the opportunity to go visit them for this on, I guess, somewhat relatively short notice. I'd only learned about this back around September. And not only be part of the wedding, but also be the photographer for the event as well.
Ooh.
So where it gets
That's a great opportunity.
It was, it was wonderful. When somebody's like, hey, I want you to be at my wedding enough that I'm going to help fly you out so that you can take photos and be a part of it. That's not something you say no to.
Right.
It was a very wonderful privilege to, be at my best friend's wedding and help be a part of that process. And also be representational because families are a very big component of Indian weddings. And so having people from Ben's side of the family, as well as Akila's side of the family, was huge. And these are, I've known those two for ages now. So it's just a nice, good way to hang out with them, and spend more time because, they're off and doing great things. But, that is what got me there. What's curious is that my sister happened to also be in the exact same city in which the wedding was occurring.
Say what?
Yeah, no, that's what I said. So I called my sister up and I was like, hey, I'm going to be in India. And she had studied abroad there in 2012 and she had also gone back in September to do some more nonprofit work. And so I got her up on the phone and I said, what if we did a little bike tour?
Now, does she bike?
No.
A lot? No.
Not at all.
Not at all. All right.
She commutes. So I should clarify this. She had been working with some agencies for nonprofit work in Minneapolis prior to this. And she attempted some winter biking, but the last time she had biked was maybe about a year and a half ago. And she's by absolutely no means a long distance cyclist. In fact, her last bike or the only bike she's purchased is like a 1970s 5-speed Schwinn or such. But
Sean
kinda,
Granton would be proud.
Yeah. I kind of have this rule where if I travel, I try to spend no less than about a month there. Cause if I'm going, halfway across the world or halfway across anywhere, I feel like it's the minimum amount of time I get to to actually fully experience things or at least get just a tiny bit of that experience in. And so I was fortunately, as someone who works at a bike shop at a place where it gets wintry, it's pretty darn slow.
Get some time off.
Yeah, so that request went pretty easy. But yeah, I roped her into a 2.5 week bike trip around India.
Nice.
Which was the best decision we've ever made. So it actually worked really, really well.
That's awesome. Yeah, and it's not like you're going to be there next week or something.
This is true.
Yeah, it's just like you have to take advantage of the time while you have it.
Yeah, and I was worried about all sorts of things. I really flubbed up and actually, I've never actually traveled across an international dateline before.
Oh.
And so when I was planning my departure from PDX, we got about within that 36-hour window, and my girlfriend Jane all of a sudden said, wait, you're not leaving on Wednesday. You're leaving on Tuesday. And it's like,
oh,
it's Monday afternoon. And I hadn't had my bike packed. I hadn't had. Like,
it's a good thing you figured that out.
Oh,
first.
Yeah. She saved me so much grief. So thank you, Jane. But yeah, so I just like kicked ass to get my bike in a box and go to the airport and ended up making it on time, fortunately. But yeah, it was quite the whirlwind there. So
yeah. How was it? Have you packed and traveled with your bike before?
I have.
Okay. So you're no stranger to it.
Yeah. It actually, weirdly enough, it went really well. So my experience is usually within the contiguous US. So I've done a lot of bike trips where it's maybe Amtraking for a stage and then shipping a bike, or shipping a bike and then Amtraking, or biking and then shipping, or some combination of the such.
Okay. Yeah.
But I usually head down the coast, and so it's really easy now that Amtrak has its walk-on program.
Right.
But the first couple times I did it, they did require that the bike was boxed. So I'm usually hunting shops in San Diego to try to get my bike back to Portland.
Right. Aaron and I have done that once or twice.
Oh, yeah. It's a good way to go. I've got a couple friends down there that help out with the process these days.
Yeah. And you don't have a bike that doesn't come apart or anything.
That's true.
You just disassemble and pack as well as you can.
That is one of my rules as a owner of only one bicycle at a time, is the next bike I get is going to have some couplers on it. Cause that is kind of for the amount of
not
hassle it is.
Bike.
No, probably not a folding bike. You know, Russ and Laura have the whole Brompton thing kind of unlock. but you know,
I can't be as cool or as famous as them.
This is true, but I can't appreciate them very much.
Yes.
Yeah. No kidding.
So I've gotten pretty good at putting in a box these days. And this was a little bit different cause I had needed to get a device, which I put Dynamo lighting on my bike last year, and I was really excited to try to navigate with my smartphone without having to rely on external power. So I got something that allows me to plug a USB into my bike and the hub there. But I also had not even installed that as of 28 hours prior to leaving. And so that was what a lot of the annoyance was, and it was totally worth it. Because what I ended up doing was getting a offline mapping program, and my sister and I literally just used offline GPS-based maps for the entire trip, and it went.
You want to say which one you use?
Sure. It is called maps.me.
Okay.
And they've got a pretty neat free version, so if you're not into paying for things, that's great. You just have to go about 3 states/countries at a time, which is what they'll allow you to download and cache. So if you've got access to Wi-Fi, you never need to pay them a dime. I decided to pony up the whopping $4 to be able to download any map for any country
Mr.
in the world.
Moneybags over
I know,
there.
Right?
Seriously.
Yeah, I've bought like maybe 4 apps on the App Store in the history of my existence.
I'm going to get you a monocle for your birthday.
Yay. No, one of the best investments, at least in what I usually spend money on for App Stores, one can make. Because that allowed me to do is we cycled a lot in the city, but we also cycled a lot in more rural India. And so it's pretty neat because you can go in literally the course of a day from the city of about 7 to 8 million all the way to a village of about 15 to 20 people in the same, you know, 40-mile distance.
Right.
So for navigating those smaller spaces, it was going anywhere from a dirt path, single lane that just kind of like weaves its way through this village. And they offer turn by turn, so it was kind of weird having this feeling of like, I'm gonna roll through and everybody's gonna be like, what the fuck are these people doing? But you know, it's like left turn up here, and you're like, well, that looks like it curves left, so like I guess I'll go that way.
Let's try it and see
what
happens.
Give it a shot. But it actually went very, very well.
Nice.
The state which we traveled in, so India is such an amazing country. I felt like as I was flying out in the airport, I just started to get just a tiny little glimpse at how complex and beautiful that country is.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the really neat things is there's lots of regional languages.
Uh-huh.
So my sister, who had done a lot of stuff up in Maharashtra, was more familiar with the dialect there, and we were down in the southern part where they speak Kannada, which is one of the hardest languages to learn. So having those directions was very, very helpful, because even though she spoke a fair bit of Hindi and a fair bit of... she's going to grill me now.
The other one.
one of the 10s to 20s to 100s of languages spoken in India. We it was very hard to understand people. So English...
And then it isn't like we tend over here to kind of like blanket things like... You know, as in these like gross generalizations, it isn't like there's one master dialect.
No, and then, colonization definitely had has some very lasting impacts.
Yeah,
And
there's
so
one good thing for an English traveler,
as someone who was a first language English learner,
right?
You know, it was very helpful. But a lot of times I've also, so sign language was my second language, and gestures are something I've always felt very keen with.
Yeah.
And so that helped as well. A lot of times it was the simple bartering. And so just making sure there's not like a miscommunication about what is being purchased and how much we are willing to pay for it versus how much somebody thinks it's worth per
se. Right,
right. Did you ever have like one of those?
The exchange rate is very favorable to the U.S., and so a lot of times, like, I think we probably could have pushed it a little harder, but also at the same time, like, we were paying what you'd consider a very fair price within the U.S. if you were doing, like, same for same and goods and services.
Sure.
We definitely got taken for a ride a few times, and, like, that's just kind of expected. I kind of have this inverse relationship between the touristiness of a place and how much people are going to try to, like, get you for money versus like you're out in the middle of nowhere and it's like, no, we don't really care. Like we know like this pack of cookies is worth 20 rupees, which is maybe 15-20 cents. And you're like, yep, I also know it's worth 20 rupees. So they start at 100, you take them down to 35 and you call it a day.
Right.
Whereas somebody who really wanted to do, you could probably take them down to 25.
But it's kind of like the idea of like the convenience or, you know, the necessity of it as well.
Yeah, and so knowing fair prices for things was definitely helpful, and that's actually where my sister was amazing, and she was amazing the whole way through. We actually I haven't spent much time with her in this in the context of like doing something with my sister in probably about 6 or 7 years.
Uh-huh.
So it was really great to connect with her, and I was just so proud of her. She shines, and so the biggest one I can think of was there's only one section in our whole trip in which we're just absolutely not permitted to bike through, and that's part of Nagarhole National Park, which is one of the hotspots, one of the 7 or 8 hotspots for biodiversity in the entire world, but it also happens to have a very thriving elephant population.
Ah.
And so where in the U.S. like we'll have cougar attacks or we'll have, you know, wolf attacks or something like that, in India, what in this part of the country, what you need to worry about is actually being trampled by elephants.
Okay.
And so if you're in a car, that's great because you can usually outrun them.
Uh-huh.
But they had an event just prior in which somebody was stampeded by an elephant herd. And so, you know, you think like, oh, they'll let us through. We'll bike it. It's fine. Like the typical, like, let's try it.
Sure.
And then you get there and it's like, no, this is a really stupid idea. So everybody knows that too, which is why you'll have a lot of rickshaws and transit line up at the borders of the park, because the park stretches between two states, which is Karnataka and Kerala. So you need to take transit for about 17 kilometers to get through. And so we had it figured out where we had decided the price we were comfortable paying for such transit, and we had gotten somebody to agree to that price. But what they had tried to do was, after agreeing to that price and being very emphatically like, yep, we shook on it, you agreed, you will take us to Kerala. Like, it's basically like saying, oh, I'm going to pay you, you know, I'll pay you $50 to take me to Idaho or something like that.
Sure.
And they're like, oh, well, I'm going to take you, like, and you happen to be in Vancouver, Washington at the time. And they take you to
off here, right?
Well,
guys?
No, they take you to the border of Oregon in Portland, and they say, all right, you're here. So that's what they did, is he drove us about a kilometer.
Now, was it like, I mean, it's all part of the hustle, I'm sure, but he was like, they're not going to know the difference between border to border.
Oh, yeah. Well, so what this guy did is he drove us about 1.5 kilometers to the entrance of the park. and he's like, all right, that'll be 2,000 rupees, which is conversion-wise about $30 US.
Uh-huh.
And to be fair, 17 kilometers through, that's a fair bit of diesel to be put in use. Like,
okay.
That's a very reasonable price for the distance. But he was just having none of it. And my sister, oh, bless her she hops out and just rips into this guy right in front of the park ranger. And we don't speak Canada very well, but yeah, you can tell the park ranger is just kind of bemusedly watching this exchange happen. And she just, yeah, she didn't let him have a single inch on it. And so
he thought he had a mark.
Oh,
and
yeah,
she let him know that was not
this,
the case.
Oh, man. I mean, like, it was, I mean, India is full of so, like, as is anywhere in the world, the vast majority of people in life are honest, like, people who just want to help somebody out. And they just want to, like, be right by the world and be right by their fellow people.
And then there's the hustlers.
This guy was a hustler. So he had this big shitting grin on his face when he accepted the fare. But she hopped down. I just chilled up in the car and say a single word. And she got him to go right to 2000. And was like, yep, you were taking us to the end of this park. This is what we shook on. This is what we agreed on. And you could tell the ranger, too. She actually pulled him into it. And she's like, look, even this ranger is like nodding his head like he thinks
he
this is a
knows.
Fair price too.
Yeah,
he's like, take these guys through. And so for comparison, like a 5-hour safari where they take you out in a ranger vehicle, they'll take you at the correct time to see most of the wildlife, and they'll literally just drive around and like camp out trying to get you the best nature viewing experience one could see, that whole safari 5 hours is 1,200 rupees. And we just wanted to pay 1,000 each just to get across.
Just
right.
It's like, no safari, just right into the jungle.
I don't care if I see the elephants.
Yeah. It's like, that would actually be better if we don't see the elephants,
right,
given our circumstance. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I was, yeah, very proud of her. Generally speaking, you know, travel was easy, but it was those frictional moments where somebody was trying to possibly take advantage of you that were the most stressful for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, did you have a sense when it was happening, or was it, or were you worried about it all the time?
Well, I think one of the strategies is, people just try to wear you down. And so even if you know what a fair price is for something, sometimes you'll be like, well, shit, you know, that's 20 more rupees. I really don't feel like getting myself down to what I know is actually what it should be charged for.
And you sort of weigh the amount of time and energy that
you want to put into it.
Yeah.
And so being a broken record is absolutely an essential skill to traveling, I found, where, you know, once you agree, and there's some genuine moments where, you know, things were misunderstood in terms of somebody accepting a fare and not realizing, like, actually how far it was. Because this is another thing you have to consider is the concept of like, the address system is just very different. And so you might not say, like, oh, I'm not like 123 on Ginkgo Road or something like that. Like, you might be, oh, I'm on Ginkgo Road past Kalpeta near the patrol station. And that's your address. And there might be 50 to 80 houses in that range. And somehow you just, like, you get close and then you kind of reevaluate. And you get closer and you reevaluate. And a lot of that relies on talking to people. So asking for directions or calling for directions is incredibly common.
Sure.
In fact, it almost happens as the first thing you do instead of the last thing you do when trying to find a residence.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah. So this is like people you were visiting? Did you have some hosts that you were...
Yeah. We sort of mixed it up. We tried to plan a lot in the beginning. And so one of the things to consider is, so cycling in general in India is viewed as the very lowest... Well, not the very lowest. I guess walking would technically be viewed as such.
Uh-huh.
But cycling is just right next to walking. It's just marginally better. And so people who are typically cycling, unless you're within the city that has just via the numbers, some small amount of cycle fanfare and competitive cycling, typically if you're on a bike, it's because you can't afford to be on a moped.
Right.
And so as people traveling by bicycle and also being a woman traveling by bicycle, like, Marika and me were in a very, like, small segment of people using the roadways within India. And so with that, we tried to plan out at first where we were going to stay exactly in this date and then, like, try to find a bus back. But that's just, like, classic traveling in this country is, like, it's okay if plans change. Like, it's not a bad thing. In fact, it's almost... The only thing you can count on is things changing. And so what we ended up doing is instead of trying to plan really far out, we'd plan maybe 1 or 2 days ahead. What's really neat about it is that because villages and because sort of concentrations of humanity are so close to each other, like it's the second most populated country in the world just behind China. So you couldn't go 5 minutes without seeing somebody if you tried.
Right.
And so what ends up happening is you get into a town that's small to mid-sized, let's say maybe maybe 500 to 1500 people or so. And there's almost always a hotel. It might not be what you wanted to sleep on or in or near, but it's going to be there. And so that offers that sense of safety. And camping as a culture is just not, it's not cultural there.
I was going to ask.
Say,
yeah.
Really
I didn't even bother bringing a tent, and I kind of knew that ahead of time. And so
you're
going to
stay somewhere.
Yeah. I think for us, our biggest, one of our biggest things that we just sort of figured out together was needing to balance that feeling of safety and security through scheduling with the reality of what would happen if that didn't necessarily pull through. So we used a mixture of hotels towards the end, where you typically pay about $3 to $10 USD for a room.
Which is not bad for a hotel room.
Yeah, and then you split it in half because there's two people.
Sure.
So
yeah.
It's relatively cheap. And there were some, like, there are definitely some flea bag type places. And I was, I think, more okay with that than she was. But also, you know, it, just having a roof over your head for her comfort and safety, especially within the culture, was very important for us. So we did our best to make sure that happened.
Yeah,
and
that
we're
makes
pretty
sense.
Good at it.
Was there ever a time where you, I don't know, were like kind of like concerned for your own personal safety, like out on the road, like you,
in, from what type of threat?
Right. Less from like other people, mm-hmm. but like say either other like forms of road usage or mm-hmm. I don't know if there was any wildlife out there. Mm-hmm. You talked a little bit about,
elephants.
About elephants.
Yeah. The elephants, you know, they don't really care if it says, like, oh, here's the border of the country.
Right,
you
right.
know, so we were in a couple of places where, it, you know, you see the dung and stuff like that. So environmental threats, there are a bunch of them, but when you're on a roadway, you're not necessarily going to encounter them. She taught me pretty quick on that the reason you walk with a light at night is that snake bites are actually very common in India.
Oh.
And we actually stayed our one warm showers host, who was fantastic. We actually ended up staying two extra days with him. He was a doctor in one of these rural communities, and I asked him, he said, yeah, I see about, you know, maybe 3 to 6 snake bites a month.
Wow.
And that's because in the fields, or but more often at night, when there's vipers that are just sort of transiting, they will bite people. So I got snapped at by one of them, but fortunately, there was actually randomly one cyclist right in front of me who was just riding one of those, like, old 70s like utility bikes,
yeah.
And he sort of weaved a little, and I was like, huh, I wonder what that is. And then you see this little snake on the side of the road coiled up and going for people. So Mariko was able to dodge it just fine. I came a little close, but honestly, it wasn't that concerning to me. And within that culture as well, snakes are viewed as an animal in which you don't kill. So it's I don't know as much on the religious or the philosophical point of it, but basically, if you get bitten by a snake, you're more likely to let it go. Instead of trying to kill it and bring it in to identify it. So
right.
That's another problem. It's like, yeah, bring us the snake so that we can, like, give you the
get
correct
the anti-venom.
Yeah. And that's a real
well,
deal.
And it also, I guess, would make for, you know, clearing out snakes from an area a little mm-hmm. bit more difficult as well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And if you see a snake, you wouldn't necessarily kill it. You'd just
right.
give it its space and be like, yep, you know, I don't know, good for you, little snake buddy.
You're a snake. You're doing well.
Like,
right.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I can see where, like, yeah, it would intermingle with civilization a little bit more than you would find around here.
Yeah, certainly. Or there's no, like, there's no forces working against the population
yeah.
of you know, vipers or snakes, for example.
Yeah. So there's a lot of them.
Yes, quite a few. So yeah, that's why you walk with the light at night. It's
yeah.
like, it might be a nice clear pathway in the U.S. I'd be like, yeah, whatever. But nope, get that flashlight out. Put it on the ground and make
could
sure you
be a snake.
Yeah, watch what you're walking on. Environmental-wise, it was pretty benign. I really didn't feel at any point in time super threatened. You know, we'd cross through, like, there would be signs on the road that are like, not panther crossing, but like large animal crossing.
Yeah.
But I think, like, realistically, and I can't really speak too much to North India because I have not traveled there, but Southern India is much safer for the type of traveling which we are doing. Cycling is not necessarily part of the cultural or social sphere on the larger element of it, but it is a very safe place to cycle. So what I'm going to make possibly, much to my chagrin, I'm going to say this.
Uh-oh.
I felt safer cycling in a 9 million person city of Bangalore than I feel most days cycling in PDX.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting. And why is that exactly?
it's just a whole different ball game.
Uh-huh.
So you see, you know, videos or you see films, and the traffic's just like crazy.
Yeah.
But the best way I could describe it is fluidic chaos.
Okay.
And if you can find that flow and you can be a part of that stream, things are actually going to go really well for you. And I found a bike particularly adept to that type of travel.
That's fascinating.
I was going to say, so it's less about having the infrastructure in place as it is maybe the speed at which infrastructure is mixing or the transportation modes are mixing.
Oh, totally. And so I rode actually quite a few roads, which were nicer pavement than we have here in Portland as well. It was hilarious. I'm sorry, Piva. Yeah, I don't hate you. I find it really funny.
Yeah, it's not a matter of hating. It's just like that. This is what it is.
Yeah,
and,
totally.
Portland roads are not great.
Yes. So, you know, people were like, a lot of people have asked me like, oh, were the potholes bad? And I was like, no, not really the potholes, but potholes play, they play a part in that orchestration. And
yeah.
So how I would describe it, and I've been trying to write a blog that kind of comes up with this, because I need to suss out like whether it's my personal like, hey, this is Guthrie's style of travel. We're talking Guthrie who rode his bike to the podcast. Like, I have a different standard for what is acceptable as a way to go through for transit. But at the same time, I did feel a lot safer cycling on even the busiest highways of India. Down in Kerala. And the reason for that is that there's a vast stratification of the types of users on the roadway. And I believe that stratification overall leads to safety. And so you would have people who are going, you know, 50, 60 miles an hour in a big truck, but they have to be much more attentive because they're dodging either the cyclist on the side of the road, the person pushing the cart, the ox, the cow, which decided it wanted to stand in the middle of the road, or, you know, any number of variables which cause this culture of attention. And so the way I describe it is, in the U.S., if you lose attention, you'll probably drift off and eventually hit something. Where if you're in India and you lose attention, give it like 5 seconds and you will hit something. So you just need to pay that much more attention.
Well, and I would imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, I would imagine the something that you hit here versus the something that you hit there are going to be very different.
Yeah.
We have things like guardrails or, you know, rumble strips on the side of the road to kind of jerk you back to attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine if you're not paying attention over there, you're going to like do some damage, if not to personal, to bodily damage, but like to, you know, property, you know, right up against the roads.
Yeah. There was for the stuff I rode on, like definitely in the city, that's true. The build, excuse me, that's our Lagunitas pills. Taking a breather. The, like in the city, they build pretty close to the road in terms of the curb cut. And in the country, you know, if you drift off, you're probably actually all right. But the chance that you hit somebody on the side of the road is much higher because there are more people in that place.
Okay.
And so what was really some of my like oddest sensation moments were being where there's an oncoming car and there's also an oncoming bus and they're maybe climbing a hill. So the car decides to overtake the bus. I'm in the oncoming lane towards both of those two vehicles.
Uh-huh.
They oncome and they see me and they pass me and they do it by maybe about 6 to 18 inches. The difference is I don't care because I feel safe. And it's so
like
weird.
You have the sense that you
I know
they're
that
paying
they
attention.
Know that I'm there.
Okay.
And I waited until I was completely done with the cycle trip to make any of these statements because I kept saying, well, like, yeah, what if I tweet about this and then I get flattened tomorrow? Like,
right.
That's going to look really good.
So make sure you leave India before you make your assessment of India.
But no, I just felt that people pay more attention and you really have to.
It's very similar to in a small way. It reminds me of my experience walking around in Mexico City.
I was thinking about that because you had mentioned something like this.
Like just, you know, cars. You look at it, and it looks really chaotic. I would never drive. Well, not never, but I wouldn't want to drive in Mexico City.
Not by choice.
If I could help it, yeah.
I would never drive in Mexico City. I'll say it.
Well, you never know what's going to happen. This is the thing.
Yeah.
But it looks like, you know, after being there, after walking around in there, you know, there's a certain attentiveness that you see people have. Like I never saw another driver like, you know, on their phone, for example. I never saw person walking on their phone. Mm-hmm. I was the person
on the phone
walking on my phone. Yeah. And there was a time where like Anna had to pull me from the curb.
Oh boy.
You know, but yeah, it kind of reminds me of that where it looks really chaotic, but everybody's still like really attentive mm-hmm. to each other.
Yeah.
You know, some people would pull like right out into an intersection, you know, to sort of assert that I'm coming through this intersection. You know, and so then if that other person coming through isn't paying attention,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have a wreck there. But mm-hmm. of course they are because
exactly.
it's in the culture, yes. you know.
Yeah. I noticed that as well. And we haven't addressed probably one of the biggest differences between traffic in India and in the U.S. is the honking. And so that is how you know. Is a honk here in the U.S., it means like, oh, I'm literally going to hit you right now. Like, you're probably
I'm
dead.
Angry.
If you can hear this, I'm either angry or you're about to get smashed.
Right. Right. Either way, it's dangerous.
Yeah. But in India, it's much more of like, yep, I'm here. Hey, now I'm over here. Like, oh, I'm over here. Yeah. And it's actually really nice. And so that,
Marco,
it desensitizes me to honking.
Marco.
Well, it's better than that. I wish I had made some recordings. So my favorite horn are these big Mack trucks,
uh-huh.
Which are... some of the municipality vehicles, but a lot of times like a larger freight truck that has space in the back. The horns actually sound, I like to call them cheerful elephant toots. And so depending on the vehicle, like there's not as much standardization for what a car horn needs to sound like.
Uh-huh.
And so you hear these like, or like, I just cannot do
awesome.
It. But I was like, every time I heard one of those, I just grinned inside because I'm like, this is so cool.
Yeah.
And so, you know, different vehicles will have different horns and not all, most of them sound actually relatively cheerful, which instead of the like type of like, like you feel like you just seize up inside.
Yeah, like an yep. American horn. Yeah.
Totally different.
Yeah. Fascinating.
So it was great. I really loved it. And I would go back anytime. Any day.
Old time.
And bring anybody else there and cycle there. Yeah.
There's a long line of people.
The opportunity like pounced in my lap.
Email the sprocketpodcast@gmail.com. We will forward your info to Guthrie. He will take you to India.
Yep. It was really wonderful.
We were talking before we started recording of like your three jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you might have just stumbled onto a fourth one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's,
I was. Yeah.
After you.
Oh, well, okay. Beep, beep. I wanted
that's
to
good, that's a good
ask,
one.
Is there anything that that you would recommend that you haven't already covered for anyone who wants to visit India by bike?
India by bike, I feel like probably taking a cycle tour here. Not here, okay, so that's pretty U.S.-centric view. You almost got where you live if you take some cycle tours. I think that never hurts. And so getting familiar with using a bike over long-term periods of time is always helpful in any context.
Yeah, do so it domestically it, first.
Yeah, so that it can leave you freer to engage with the social connections and happenstance that are going to occur where you travel. I found that people were overwhelmingly welcoming and curious, and that's another thing. I think it's a little more so in the north. And some, like I said, I'm the last person to go visit the touristy attractions. Like my sister drug me to one day because she's like, you have to visit one thing that's touristy. And I was like, all right, let's go to Mysore Palace. That's fine. But typically, like, I stay away from the main event. When you are in India, there are so many people, and you're typically the only person who's like sticking out of the crowd. So there's a lot of you get used to people staring at you,
okay,
and people will do so unabashedly from the moment you enter vision until the moment you leave that visage. And so I actually just started waving at people, which seemed to work pretty well. Like, you sort of read the situation. But that was actually my favorite moment. Actually, one of my favorite moments from the trip was cycling back towards Bangalore. There was a woman and her daughter in the back of a sort of a tri-wheel vehicle. And within the culture, a guy would not necessarily like acknowledge or wave at or like initiate contact with a member of the opposite sex unless it was sort of a family member. So uh-huh. it's kind of frowned upon depending on your social circle. So I got used to like not doing that to the like people that we encountered. So a lot of times if someone was going to talk to it, like they'd basically pretend my sister didn't exist. And my favorite part of that was just not talking and letting them deal with her. Being like, yeah, sorry, I'm not going to let you get away with this one.
Well, and she's the one that knew the language.
Oh, yeah, totally. You know, so. I'm like, you're going to look at this fucking white guy who's been here for 3 days. And here's my sister who's been here for almost 2 years. Like,
right.
Let's see how this plays out,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah.
She's amazing. She, like, I just sit back and let her deal with it.
Yeah. So bring a sister. sister who's been to India for 2 years.
That's probably the secret answer. That's the secret recipe there. But within that, so yeah, we were cycling and her daughter were sort of like escaping field of view, and you could tell like the daughter was just really curious. She was probably about 7 or 8. And so this was the last day that we were cycling fully in the trip. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to like wave at her. And she just lights up like a candle, and she's just so happy that like this person waved at her, and she just like, she shakes her mom's sleeve and is like, look at this person.
Look at the guy on the bike. He waved.
As they're like streaming away on this highway. But what was really neat about it was, so maybe half an hour later we roll into town, and I'm rolling. I look over to the left. And there she is again, except this time it's the mom, the dad, and the daughter all like, hey, like waving it up to school, passing by them.
And they waved first, so it was okay.
Yeah, it was totally fine. And, you know, she just lights up again. And then the final ending to the story is they passed us one more time as we went through. And this time they were totally ready for it. So she's just waving the whole way through. But that was just really touching. That was one of my favorite moments of the trip.
Road friends. That's cool.
Yeah, crossing those cultural boundaries.
Yeah. Well, very cool. Did you account for your adventures online somewhere? Is there a blog that people can look at? Or?
Mostly Twitter at this point. Okay. My stuff for Film by Bike spins down just a little bit in the beginning of February before it picks up again. I do intend to update with a couple of posts on my blog,
cool,
which is pedaldream.com.
Mm-hmm.
Spelled like a bike pedal. But yeah, if you want to check stuff out, Twitter's good for now, and then there should be some stuff posting there, but I'll put it out onto my social media networks.
Very good. We'll share that when it comes out.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for sharing stories, man. Welcome back to Portland. Icy as it is, I'm glad you enjoy it again.
And, yeah, totally.
I'm glad you had adventures in India. That's that sounds awesome.
It was, yeah. Gosh, it was so wonderful.
Yeah. Well, we may not have ourselves tales to regale you with.
At least not from
vacation.
India.
Yes. Right. A bike tour. Would you call it a vacation? Here and there.
Yeah, a bit of both.
Yeah.
Yeah, it depends.
Yeah. An adventure. But what we do have.
We got mail. Hey, we got mail.
We have one piece of mail.
We have exactly one mail.
Exactly one mail.
That's right.
But it's from a very, very special person.
Yeah.
From a very special female.
Yeah, for sure. Aqua. Super fan Aqua, who you should all know her by now. She's the coolest. But she sent us a thing about...
Unless you're just like, you know, this is the first time you've ever listened to us, in which case, welcome. We have a super fan by the name of Aqua.
Yes.
And here is a piece of mail from her.
She sent a question about bicycling and trains. And I have a transit question for you, she says. I'm thinking about taking a train to Pennsylvania and back for a visit this spring. My luggage will include one backpack and one bicycle. Maybe not even the backpack. Anyway, do you know if this is possible? And if so, what would you recommend? If it isn't possible, I suppose I could look into super expensive planes. I've never flown, so I guess it's a decent time to start. But I told her that right now I know the Empire Builder has the new roll-on service where you can take your bike in, hang it on a hook. There's a nominal fee.
You could take it as far as Pittsburgh, if not farther.
Empire Builder goes to Chicago from Portland, and
but
then
from
there,
Chicago,
Keystone
can,
service goes all the way through, diagonally across the state of Pennsylvania. So I don't know if Keystone, and I, you know, this question came in some time ago, and I still have not done the research to find out
if
you can take,
roll on.
Yeah, you might have to find a bike box in Chicago and box it up and have it checked.
But I don't know. I think I remember something about, like, Amtrak on all of their long distance now has...
Like a book through?
Roll-on.
Almost all of their, yeah. So,
yeah. So
this is a question
for
the wider populace.
Yes.
If you have information for us about roll-on bicycle service for Keystone down through the great
That's
state
the
of Pennsylvania.
Link, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. We don't know. We don't know. I do know that Amtrak has gotten a lot better about this in recent years, and it makes it a lot more possible for this to happen. So, Aqua, I'm sure you've got some of this stuff taken care of. I also recommend it, and I have not used it, but I know that bike flights, if you cannot get your bicycle on the train with you for the entire trip, you can have your bike shipped to you.
Amtrak's been getting a lot better at having
Amtrak
boxes.
Freight.
No, oh, well, having even, bike boxes at the station.
Oh,
so
good.
She might call her station, or well, probably have to call, but I don't know if they do email too well. But I know at least for the last trip I took where a box was needed, Amtrak actually provided one.
There you go. Yeah.
Can you reserve a box?
It's kind of a floaty basis.
Okay.
I know that my scenario was at the Amtrak station in San Diego, and so it may be just as a result of being the end of the ACA route for cycling south up along the coastline.
Yeah.
But worth checking into, because if they've got one at the station, just bring some tools and you're probably set.
For sure. I know when we were in San Luis Obispo, there were exactly 3 bike boxes, mm-hmm. and there were 2 other people in front of us in line.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
I had to run 2 bike shops, bike shops.
Did you visit Wally's cycle shop?
I think so. I'm pretty sure I did.
Did he have a huge collection of vintage bikes in his back garage?
You know, I was running.
That's
totally
fine.
It might have been the second time I was, it might have been the second shop I went
to,
so I don't know. Yes, beautiful, quaint little town, San Luis Obispo. Mm-hmm. Also, all of Pennsylvania, beautiful, quaint, full of Amish people riding in cars that other people are driving, selling their furniture. It's great. So
I might even go so far, Aqua, to suggest perhaps maybe you could ride your bike from Chicago through Pennsylvania.
My oh my.
I know you've just got yourself a new bike that would be suited towards that. By the way, welcome to the Surly family.
Hey now. That's a good idea.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, good luck, Aqua, whatever it is, and let us know what you do and what you find out, because we would like to know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Also,
you're not moving, are you?
Let's hope not.
No.
Let's hope not.
Stay.
Yeah.
We've got great roads. And it never snows.
Ever.
Mail from Mr. T. Speaking of places where it snows.
Yes.
He, as a matter of fact, is from Montana, but he's going to Seattle. And he sent us, hey guys, have either of you ever ridden the Chili Hilly Ride in the Seattle area?
I have not.
Modest registration fee helps the Cascade Bicycle Club provide bicycle education programs for children, families, school groups, and everyone else who wants to ride a bike. It also helps us advocate for safer, more connected bicycle infrastructure throughout the state and region. It's 2,191 feet of climbing spread across 33 miles of riding around Bainbridge Island in Puget Sound with a ferry ride from Seattle. So he invited us to go join, and I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to. I looked at it, and it sounds fun, but I'm not sure. We may have plans.
We should put this on the calendar, though.
It will definitely be on the calendar. So next time when we have our show notes together, it'll be on the post. But we will not read the calendar this week, I guess. But yes, the Chili Hilly, which I have heard of it. I have not ridden it. It sounds cool. My wife actually did one of her first bike tours with her sister way back in the day on Bainbridge Island.
On Bainbridge?
Yeah.
Really?
And, her great aunt and uncle dropped them off at the ferry terminal and thought they were nuts, but they biked around the island. They found a place to camp, and then they came back. So
I wanted to do that when one of my friends got married.
That's right.
I can't remember the name of the park now.
Yeah.
But I think it was on Bainbridge,
mm-hmm.
and there was a bunch of people parking or camping in that park.
Right.
As well.
And right.
So originally I was going to bolt bus up to Seattle, ferry over, and then bike through Bainbridge to this park.
Yeah, but you ended up not.
No.
It was easier not to.
Yeah. Plans fell through. But, you know, there's always next wedding.
That's true. Next time there's a wedding on Bainbridge Island.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's close this thing out, shall we?
Why not?
It's been fun. Again, Guthrie, thank you. Very much appreciated.
Absolutely.
Thank you, beer mongers, for giving us these tasty beverages in this cold chill.
And thanks for
coming
at such a short notice.
No,
Did we mention that?
No kidding.
Like, not a problem.
This was like maybe, 10 minutes before showtime I gave you a call. And yeah, so great that you came down for this.
Indeed.
Yeah.
We're a fan.
Yay.
Big fans of the Guthrie Straw brand.
Thank you.
A brand we've come to know and trust.
Dear God.
Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text to 503-847-9774.
Twitter at Sprocket Podcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Kurt Bird for our headline sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Foot, Shadowfoot, Katharina Mellengard,
Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson,
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson,
Cameron
Lee,
Richard Wodzinski, Tim Mooney,
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly, Jim Gooden,
Eric Wise, Doug Cohen Miller,
Todd Parker, Chris Gonzalez, Dan Gebhardt,
Zoe Campagna, Dave Knows, Chris Smith,
Christy Kaster, Caleb Jenkins, JP Cooley,
Peanut Butter Jar Matt, Patrick Archane, Sebastian Poole,
Marco Lowe, Rich Otterstrom, Andrew in Colorado,
Drew the Welder, Anna, Krista,
John Wasserman, Andre Johnson, King of Division,
Josh Sisson, Richard G., Guthrie Straw,
Brandon Shelby, Campsite, Aaron Green,
Mac Nurse, David, Catherine Minchin, Nathan Poulton,
Chris Rawson, Rory in Michigan, Michael Flournoy,
Jeremy Kitchen, David Belays, Tim Coleman,
Mr. T., Harry Hugel, Elton Whitman,
EJ Finner and Paul Culbertson and Subvert,
and Brad Hipwell and Thomas Skato, our newest donors.
Oh yeah!
And thank you to all of our former donors who helped us get this far.
Now, brush your teeth.
put out the ice melt, and go to bed.
Yes, put out the salt.
Did you get to say everything you wanted to?
Oh, yeah. We could do like five episodes, though.
I would imagine, right?